Hi, and welcome to Zed Games. Recorded live at 4ZZZ Studios in Brisbane and broadcast nationally over the Community Radio Network, Zed Games brings you the latest gaming news, reviews and interviews from across Australia and around the world.
You're listening to Zed Games, your favourite and my favourite gaming radio program. We are coming to you live from the 4ZZZ Studios in Brisbane. You might be listening to us across the nation on the Community Radio Network. Joining me in the studio for this episode, Razor.
Hello.
There he is, Jody McGregor.
Hello.
And I am Lee. Ray, what are we talking about this episode?
Lee, you have been playing a digital board game called Armello.
That's right.
That was created by a Melbourne development team. It's in early access on Steam right now. Is that correct?
I have been playing that, yes. It is delightful. Yeah. It's Game of Thrones meets Disney's Robin Hood.
Sold. I've been playing WWE Immortals. It's a button-mashing tablet/phone game starring all of your favorite WWE superstars and divas.
Good. And it's designed by the people that made Mortal Kombat, right?
That's right.
See, sold once again. Jody, what have you been playing?
Not very much, actually. I've been too busy, which is sad. So all I've been playing is Fairy Solitaire, because I quite like solitaire.
And fairies.
Yeah. I know they go together quite well.
Awesome.
I hope we get to squeeze a little bit of your first impressions out of you.
All right.
And then later on.
Fine.
Yeah.
Okay, let's kick this episode off with the weekend gaming news headlines. Mr. Jody McGregor.
Absolutely. Graphics card manufacturer NVIDIA has admitted that it misrepresented the specifications of the GTX 970 after users claimed that there were performance issues when utilizing all of the card's video RAM. Upon its release in September, the 970 was widely praised by tech websites for setting a new benchmark in power-to-price ratio, as well as energy efficiency. In an interview with PC Perspective this week, NVIDIA senior engineer Jonah Alban admitted that the published specifications were incorrect and that the card was less powerful than advertised. A Change.org petition calling for refunds has been launched already.
So, Lee, this is the graphics card that's sitting in your beast at home.
That's right.
So you're personally affected by this. What are your thoughts?
It's annoying because I thought that I had 4 gigs of RAM and turns out that I've got 3.5. And it seems like it has affected a few games. Your performance starts wigging out at the top end of things if you're using all your RAM. So if you're playing like Watch Dogs, which is badly optimized at super high levels of detail anyway, you will notice that it is, I guess, not as great as you would like. And it's annoying because I was thinking that I was going to get this super slick thing. Still, like, it benchmarks still at, you know, a phenomenally high level for the price. And I was thinking about going to sign that change.org petition, but it was so badly written that I could not put my signature to it.
I feel your pain.
Yeah, it was like, I do think that NVIDIA are, like, they are probably at some legal fault here. They need to do something to make this good with their customers because it seems like it's false advertising straight out of the gate. But maybe someone who can write with a little bit more eloquence should perhaps be in charge of the terms of this agreement.
I agree with your cause, but dislike your use of grammar and punctuation.
That's right.
No signature.
Yes.
Yeah, I always dislike when these companies don't, like, they knew about this, right?
Yeah.
But it's only until the customers wised up and said, hey, wait, it's not what you said it was, that they said, oh, okay, yeah, you're right, it's not.
Yeah.
You know, what, like, who do they take us for, idiots?
Well, yeah, because the way that they did it was they were like, yeah, you got us. I guess the guys in marketing had the higher stats than the ones that we actually knew that it contained, and we didn't tell them. But, you know, accidents happen when you put lies on the box on the machine that you're selling based on those lies.
Yeah, I can understand the initial mistake, but then not correcting it until someone caught you, you know. Well, I don't like that.
Like, if your job, like, marketing's job is to sell you a product based on what it is and then make that seem palatable, you know. So, lying, obviously. But you can't get that sort of information incorrect because it's really legally binding.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's almost class action lawsuit worthy, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'd say so. I think if they don't make good immediately, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, it seems like it. So that'll be great when, you know, a bunch of people band together and lawyers make a lot of money off it, and then eventually someone sends me a check for $27, which is my millionth of the whatever sum they settle upon.
Yeah.
See, now, if you were playing Fairy Solitaire, this wouldn't be an issue.
Right.
Virtual reality pioneer Oculus VR has announced the formation of an internal unit that will focus on creating VR movies. The division will be called Oculus Story Studio and boasts artists, creators, and technicians that have previously worked at Pixar and Lucasfilm. Company co-founder Nate Mitchell said, "When we started Oculus, we really thought that the major focus for VR was going to be games. Now that the Rift is sort of maturing as a technology, and really virtual reality as a whole, the potential is there to take these people to virtual worlds."
That's curious. Although, every time that game development companies decide that they're going to investigate the world of cinema, we get some real gems, right?
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
Yes, we do.
And only good things have ever come out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, I'm not surprised that they're thinking beyond games, but I am surprised that in moving beyond games, they just go to movies, which seems like a step backwards rather than like all of the potential amazing things you could do with educational software or with like virtual tourism or recreating a museum or something inside your computer.
Yeah.
And they went with like what was popular in the 20th century.
Yeah. Here's a freebie, Oculus, if you're listening, which you are. Just get that map of Renaissance Rome from Assassin's Creed and let someone walk around in that. There you go. You just made $1 million.
That's really cool. I'm curious to see where the movies go as well. Maybe they'll be awesome, maybe not. But yeah, like Jody said, the educational possibilities are enormous. I'd like to see, this is just me fantasizing here.
No, don't fantasize about what you want Oculus Rift on the radio, Ray.
We don't have
educational. It's okay.
We don't have a 6-second.
Okay.
We may have to bleep this out in post.
Yeah, stuff that'll breach the community guidelines aside.
Right.
Imagine if, like, you know, an astronaut went to the moon or to Mars with a 3D camera or a GoPro attached to their head, and everyone around the world is there with him. With VR goggles on, living that alongside him or her.
That would be amazing.
Yeah. That would be good. I mean, that's what Microsoft pitched in their augmented reality thing that they announced last week, right? They had this whole thing that apparently a lot of tech journos got to experience, put the goggles on, and suddenly they're on Mars with the lander and with a bunch of NASA people looking at the lander, looking at Mars, able to go and just... There's a rock over there. I'll look at that. This is a Mars rock that I'm looking at with my augmented reality goggles. I want to do that.
Yeah.
Where's my augmented reality headset? Huh? Make it happen, Ray.
The PlayStation 4 version of Saints Row 4 Re-Elected has been recalled from retailers across Australia due to a manufacturing error. The version of the game that went on sale last week was the incorrectly classified version, featuring content that was intended to be cut from the Australian release to comply with our classification guidelines. Customers who purchased the physical PS4 version of the game are able to return it to the retailer for a full refund, and replacement copies featuring the correct content will be available soon.
Yeah, right. I don't think they're going to get too many returns, considering that... They're calling it the correct version of the game, but what we've got here in Australia, or what we should have, is the cut, edited version. So, I don't know. I think anyone who bought it is lucky that they've got the, the non...
Don't trade that back in for store credit.
The only reason I could see for trading it in is that if you have the incorrect version, you won't be able to play it like with co-op or do the online stuff. Because your version will be like incompatible with the version your friends have if they got it later. So play it now, finish it, and then trade it in. Get the copy you can play online.
Sell it on eBay.
Sell it on eBay, right. Yeah.
That's going to be awesome. So just for our listeners that don't know what the big deal about Saints Row 4, the DLC is, There was a weapon in there, the alien anal probe weapon that allows you to, as you can imagine, go around and forcibly insert the alien probe, you know.
And then shoot people into orbit.
Yeah,
that kind of thing. I'll try not to get too graphic, but that's the gist.
Yeah, I think you actually described it in a far more graphic way than it actually is in the game.
Yeah.
Like, it's a rocket that lands in someone's back pocket and then they fly into space. In the game, it's not that well rendered and it's just a funny thing. The way you described it was perverse. You're a monster. Children could be listening
well,
right
I'm
now.
Well, I'm sorry about that, and I apologize. But yeah, like you said, it's funny, right? It's humorous.
Now, mind you know, for some people, maybe it isn't funny. So, yeah.
And the other thing that had to be cut for the Australian release was one mission in which you take drugs and then get superpowers from it, which is cutting too close to the rules about incentivizing drug use, as unrealistic as the idea that smoke and crack gives you superpowers is. It was still against the rule.
Yeah, that was a really good mission too.
Yeah, it was super fun.
It was one of the best ones in Saints Row 4.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a real shame that they took that out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Context. It made sense in context.
It was very funny at the time.
Yeah.
Hello and welcome back to Zed Games. You just heard Daft Punk with the end titles from Tron Legacy. Now, Lee, you have been playing a game that's in early access at the moment from an Australian studio called Armello.
Yeah.
You said it's like Game of Thrones, but with Disney's Robin Hood?
That's right, yeah.
So it's like the furry version.
It's not like the furry version, because if you hop onto the internet, people have gone to great lengths to explain that Disney's Robin Hood is not a furry property.
Okay.
Due to the fact that, gross, why would you introduce that this early into the review?
Just get it out of the way. So what is Armello?
Armello is it's a digital representation of a board game. So it's a turn-based strategy game where you control one of four different animal clans going around a kingdom questing and gathering resources whilst you deal with the fact that the king, the once noble Lion King, is slowly succumbing to the madness of the magical rot. And every day you have to deal with his terrible edicts, and by the end of the game, you're hoping to either become so renowned within the kingdom that you are obviously the best choice for the next king, or you might want to actually just straight up physically overthrow him, or become so corrupted with rot yourself that you end up stealing the crown. So, yeah, it sounds complicated. It is sort of, but it's very easy to pick up and play, and it is gorgeous. It has this wonderful almost like a children's book, kind of very Redwall, you know, that book of children's stories about mice that live in a medieval castle. So yeah, lots of bears with staves learning shaman magic and wolves as a knights wielding swords and stuff like that.
Kind of like Mouse Guard?
Yeah. Also Mouse Guard, a bit like that. So
being a digital board game, is it actually set on something that resembles a board?
Sort of, yes. You're on it's a hexed-based grids. So obviously there's a board that is randomized at the start of each play session, and a game lasts generally around an hour and a half, and you can't save in between. So it's a condensed strategy game, really. And because your tactics involve having resources to expend using cards, and the cards will have like magical equipment or there'll be political maneuvers, things like that. So everything is... It could be translated into a physical object, which is really my only complaint with it, which is that I wish it were a board game that I could just play with people who are right beside me, because I really want to play this game against other people who are right there, so that when they're the sneaky rat and they do something underhanded and get toads to whisper secrets about me so I lose all of my settlements, then I can hit them in the face rather than just typing in "you're a jerk" in the multiplayer mode.
There's something really fun about playing a board game in a competitive way and then screwing over your friend and then getting to look into their eyes, seeing the disappointment, seeing that like they're saying, "How could you betray me? I thought we were friends." Like, that's a really delicious thing to experience.
Tears is what you're talking about. Yeah. Your tears of your friends are delicious to you, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, so this, it has a single player mode. It has AI that can play as the other three factions when you're playing. It also has online multiplayer. But as good as that is, there doesn't seem to be a hot seat mode. I think it would be a difficult thing to include in the interface as it is, because you have secret cards, stuff up your sleeve that you don't want other people to know about. So that's disappointing. I imagine that playing this multiplayer with other people would be incredibly rewarding, and more so than playing against the AI, which is fun. But when in a game like this, where every card you have is basically an adorable middle finger to someone else on the table, you don't get the same sense of satisfaction when it's an AI player doing that to you. When the AI messes you around, it's just like the game is being mean to you. But if someone you know is doing it, there's a lot more at play there. You know, it's fun when a friend is a jerk in a board game, because then you can be much worse to them, either in the game or later on when they're asking for a favor. You know, like, yes.
So when your armies of bears and rabbits or whatever actually meet on the field of battle, does it, like, do that might and magic thing of suddenly you're playing a different game, or how does it work?
When you find yourself facing off against your opponents, which you will do all the time because the AI, bunch of jerks, really aggressive, the game switches to a fantastically hand-drawn and animated battle sequence between your guy and theirs, and then you can expend some of your cards to get known resources, and you'll also have a handful of dice based on your stats, which you then roll, and the dice will determine your ultimate outcome. So you can basically spend some of your other resources that have other purposes on the strategic board to guarantee an outcome. So it's really clever. It means that, you know, you can roll it and get a bunch of exploding dice and luck yourself into success, but you can also, prior to that, have some influence over it. Yeah.
And tell me about the animals. There's what, rats, toads, bears?
Yeah, so there are four factions. There's the sneaky rat, there's the magic-wielding bear, there's the adventurous exploring rabbit, who is armed with a parasol with a secret sword in it. And then there's the knightly and combat-favoring wolf. There are other animals in the game that do other things as well that are represented mostly in the cards. You can get explorers that will help you out as your companions, and they appear to be plucky little mice, and they're adorable. The king is a lion, and there are gross, monstrous, undead crows that emerge from dungeons and terrorize part of the board.
Right.
Yeah.
Does that mean it's only four player with only four factions?
Yes, it is.
Double up?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. So it's it's a quite contained game. The board itself is something that you can cross pretty easily, but there's a quest system in place where you can choose to go on quests to gain resources, and that will send you back and forth across the map with little story snippets in there. So it's a lot of fun to play. It's very rewarding. There's a great deal of feedback, and it's incredibly gorgeous. So the environment itself is lush and colorful. And it's got a lot of neat little special effects on it, clouds passing over the top of the board, things like that. And the pieces that you control are really well animated and full of character when they fight and when they romp around the board. It looks great. But at the moment, even though there are a number of different win conditions that are baked into it, it seems like the one where you just wait out the king's death and spend most of the game avoiding other players and questing by yourself is actually the easiest one to do, which I think would be different if you were playing against other people, because they would recognize that strategy and be able to shut you down. But against the AI, they're just kind of dumb and lumbering about the place while you are cleverly getting out of their way. So at the moment, I'm hoping that they add more incentive to perhaps trying other strategies. And I think that they're going to be tweaking it over the next couple of months in early access. That said, though, it's the most complete game in early access I've ever encountered. It doesn't really have any technical issues. All of the art that's in place is perfect. Like, if they just released that, I would tell you that it's brilliant and tell you to rush out and get it. And I kind of am anyway. It's charming, and there's not that many things like it at the moment. I really, really hope that they include some kind of hot seat mode. Otherwise, I hope that you guys just buy it based on me telling you to do this now, because then we can get into fights as charming mouse guardy animals, and that would be fun. I'm the rat.
Okay. You call dibs on the rat.
I call dibs on the rat. Right.
Fine.
I'm definitely intrigued.
Yeah.
So if I want to get this game, how can I?
If you go into Steam, it's on early access right now. You might have already kickstarted it, perhaps. They had a very successful Kickstarter campaign last year, and I was just having a look through the Kickstarter page and lamenting the fact that I didn't do that because of all the extras and cool stuff. There's a bandit faction with a squirrel wearing a Zorro mask. Damn it!
Well, there's always opportunities for DLC down the track.
Yes. Listen, League of Geeks, if you're listening in, I would totally sell all of my whatever credibility I have for that squirrel wearing the domino mask, just so that we're all on the same page here. Yeah.
If you just joined us, we've been talking about Armello, which is an awesome digital board game that you can get on Steam by an Australian developer. So
yes.
Check that out.
You are listening to 4ZZZ and Z Games, the gaming radio show with Jody, Razor, and Lee. What were we just listening to there?
That was Solatris with Ultramarine.
Ah, right. So, Ray, you have been playing WWE Immortals recently.
That's right, and that's a result of me actually getting into the WWE thing over the last 9 months or so.
Right.
Yeah, I've been watching it. It's fascinating. Interesting. The first thing that comes to most people's mind is like, isn't it fake? You know, it's sport, but it's fake, right? Yes, it is. It's very fake.
Well, I wouldn't call it sport.
Well, it's sports entertainment. That's what they call it.
Right.
Yes, but it's actually the closest thing to like a theater in the round for lower to middle class people in America.
You're saying wrestling is just Shakespeare for poor people?
Pretty much.
Okay.
The poor man's Shakespeare. They should put that on as their promotional material.
That's right. I mean, if you watch like 10 minutes of it, it's just a couple of buffoons pretending to hit each other, right?
Yeah.
But if you watch it over an extended period, there's these long, drawn-out storylines, characters that are quite compelling and very, I don't know, it's kind of a cool good versus evil thing that's going on, and there's always surprises.
Now, keep in mind, in the break, we had an extended conversation about superheroes. So I think that you are in a room with people who are willing to accept that there is entertainment to be had from watching people in spandex shout a lot and pretend to hit each other. So you don't have to sell wrestling to people, really. Like, it is lowbrow, but so is absolutely everything that this show is about. So, fine, keep going.
What's I think fascinating about the WWE is how they sort of weave real things that happen in real life into their fictional storylines. For example, Daniel Bryan, who was like the underdog, the ultimate underdog, he actually injured his neck, so they wrote that into the storyline by having Kane the Demon pile drive him three times in succession.
Right. I was hoping you were going to say that, like, they responded to Princess Di's death or something like that. But, you know, real events.
Yeah, nothing that, you know,
okay.
That extravagant.
Right.
But,
Who's Cain the Demon? I'm out of touch here. Is he an actual demon? Please tell me he is.
Well, according to the storyline,
yeah,
you know, according to
yeah.
the
not in real life.
He is a demon.
Hey, okay, hey, good. All I needed to hear.
Let's not break kayfabe, all right?
So he's actually the director of operations. He's in a corporate position, and he comes out in a suit and tie, and he's like the boss, right? But then there's this mask that he keeps backstage in a glass cabinet, and when he puts the mask on, he turns into the demon Cain, and he can't control himself, and neither can his superiors, so he just goes and does really bad stuff.
That's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, WWE Immortals plays up to that sort of superhero cartoony thing.
Listeners, you got to see the smile on Ray's face right now. It's charming. Keep going.
Yeah. So the storyline within the game is that Bray Wyatt's lantern, so Bray Wyatt's a wrestler, he's like a hillbilly guy, and his shtick is he comes out with a lantern, the house lights are down, everyone has the lights on their phone, and like he comes out, it's all dramatic, right? Anyway, in the game, his lantern is a portal to an alternate universe, and the Authority, who is Triple H, who is the famous classic wrestler, and his wife Stephanie McMahon, of course, the daughter of WWE mogul Vince McMahon, they've taken this lantern for themselves because they think it contains the ultimate power, which it does. They activate it without knowing exactly what it does, and it turns out it's a portal to another dimension where all of the WWE superstars and the divas are superheroes, and they have, like, awesome powers. So it's nonsensical, basically.
Right. So what that sets up is a version of wrestling where they actually do have superpowers. So, like, when you're fighting them in the matches that I assume make up most of the game, can they, fly, shoot fireballs at each other?
Yes, exactly that. For example, John Cena, who is pretty much the Boy Scout of the WWE, that's his persona. He's like, do the right thing, train hard, and never give up. He is...
Good advice.
He is Superman in the game, pretty much. He's got a red, white, and blue spandex costume, and he does Superman-style maneuvers. Paige, who is like the goth chick, she's like a dark sorceress, and she's got these purple fireballs. The Bella twins, one of them is an ice queen, and the other one's a fire queen. Triple H, who is like the big bad leader of the WWE, he's the King of Kings, and he's got like a sword, and he's dressed like King Arthur, you know, ready to run into battle and kick some butt. And The Rock is some sort of rock monster. He's actually made of stone
yes.
with like blue energy coming up from where the stone is crumbling. So that's what they're going for here. And it actually really suits the cartoony nature of the WWE more than those other games. You know, the 2K games, like WWE 2K15 that I didn't play because I heard it was crap.
Well, like we were playing one recently at an event, and it was annoying because they had animated all the fakery that goes on, and it's you could make it so that it looked like these people were hitting each other, but instead they captured the fact that no one hits anyone, and all of the moves are clearly like cuddles done at high speed, and I couldn't understand why. Why would you like cue that closely to reality when you could actually do the thing that it was supposed to be?
That's right, yeah. So this is a very refreshing, and it's actually a better representation of the action that I feel than those super realistic, you know, realistic in inverted commas, WWE 2K games that they've got, which is, like Lee said, it's just like a really realistic depiction of a fake thing. So there's like magic lost there.
So this is made by NetherRealm. It was the company that made Mortal Kombat. They made the Injustice game about the evil Justice League hitting each other a lot. So they're very good at telling really dumb stories with idiots dressed like buffoons in hyperactive, insane ways. So have they brought their A game to this?
I haven't played the Injustice mobile game. But I've heard that this is pretty much just a reskin of that.
Right.
So if you played that, it's exactly the same, except with the WWE characters instead of DC Universe characters. Now, that said, it's a great game. Like, for a mobile title, it's great. There's no movement back and forth. There's none of the strategy that the console games have. It's a reflex-based thing where you tap and swipe to do punches and moves and stuff like that. But that said, it's pretty fun. It starts off really easy, and you're just button mashing, and you're winning. But then after a little while, you've got to actually start timing your moves and knowing when to execute certain things to defeat the opponents. Mm. There's also a multiplayer mode, but you don't actually face off against people in real time. You face off against their teams that they've built, and then you go against the computer AI there.
Is there any of the melodrama of wrestling, like, in between matches? Do they have any kind of story stuff?
I haven't seen any. Oh. No, I think it's pretty much just...
You're breaking my heart, Ray.
Yeah, that would be really cool. Mm. There's just a really loose story that ties the whole thing and sort of, you know, justifies the whole insane concept that they've got here.
Oh, man. Because that was one of the best things about the, like, Mortal Kombat and Injustice, is that the single player had this absurdly overproduced campaign with these huge animated sequences between each and every match to provide context, which you don't need at all, but it's wonderful when there's like 7 minutes in between each fight of Batman getting into an argument with evil Superman and stuff's exploding everywhere. Like, it was, I definitely got dumber as a result of it, but I enjoyed the whole thing.
Yeah, most of the fun here is seeing the characters that you're familiar with in their absurd, exaggerated, new personas, and seeing their moves come to life in a comic book style way. Roman Reigns is like, he's a bit of a, I guess he's like a SWAT guy. He's very tall, he's very good looking, and his move is the Superman punch, which of course is a jumping high punch, I guess.
Right.
And in this, the Superman punch, he jumps up probably, you know, 6 or 7 feet into the air, and he comes down and, like, he just smashes the opponent, and there's an explosion. So the moves are really awesome. And, most of the fun is in seeing the crazy stuff that these guys get up to. And that's sort of where the whole microtransaction payment model comes in. It is a free game, and you have a handful, a very small handful of characters that are unlocked at the start, and you sort of... you can buy cards or buy characters to get the new ones. Mm. And that's sort of your goal. That's the grind. You get currency by winning matches, and then you can either get characters, like, you choose the characters that you want for a large price, or you buy, like, booster packs that could contain, like, moves or characters randomly, and they're much cheaper.
Have you bought any?
No, not yet. I'm kind of saving up.
For Hulk Hogan, right?
Yeah, well... Hulk Hogan's not in it, disappointingly.
It. The Undertaker?
Undertaker's there. Yeah.
Is Mankind in it?
Mankind's not in there.
Oh, come on.
But it's
I've run out of
wrestlers. It's just the frame rate. It's just the framework. You can see how they may add new wrestlers in quite easily down the track.
Rowdy Roddy Piper?
No, he's not there.
Sergeant Slaughter?
He's not there.
The Iron Sheik?
He's not there. I don't even know who he is.
It's good, because he was really kind of racist.
He was, yeah. Don't put him in it.
No. So, it's mainly new roster people who are on the current roster, with only a couple of people who aren't, like The Rock and Trish Stratus.
What about Mickey Rourke as the wrestler? From the movie, The Wrestler.
Yeah, I know that. That's silly.
That's silly. That's where we draw the line, Lee.
God damn
Stop
it.
Stop being silly.
It was bound to happen eventually.
Yeah. Even though it is a long grind to get the characters, it's still pretty fair. Like, you got a stamina bar that where you can only fight 10 matches in a row with the character before they get tired, and you have to put your device away for a certain amount of time. But that's probably more than I'd want to play anyway, 10 matches in a row, so it's completely fair. You get a couple of 100 points, and I think the first tier of characters is like 11,000. So a couple of 100 points for one match, and then you can buy characters for 11,000 to give you an idea of how long you'll be grinding for.
Nope, no idea.
Yeah.
I can't work that math out. I don't want to.
So are you playing this on a phone or tablet? Which would it be better on?
Definitely a tablet. Yeah, I tried to get it on my phone, but I was using a Galaxy S3, and it didn't like that. Wouldn't even launch. Mm. And I have to warn you as well, it's quite a large download. It's 1.4 gigs, which is absolutely massive for a mobile game.
Yeah. Yeah, don't download that on the train.
Yeah. Don't do that. But yeah, overall, I mean, it's free. There's no real scam involved with the payment thing. Like, you don't have to pay for play for 5 seconds and then pay $10 to continue.
How likely is it that you could accidentally end up purchasing something, like a new hat for someone?
Mysterio. For me, there was no accidental, like, that would just never happen because there's a separate section with store.
Yep.
And then everything's clearly marked with points. And then there's a separate, there's not like three different currencies or anything like that. There's one currency, and if you want, you can buy it with real money.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, we're all always concerned about kids being able to accidentally spend $500 on new boots for the Undertaker in a wrestling game. Like, that's embarrassing. That ends up on your credit card invoice. What are you going to do? How do you explain that to anyone?
Yeah.
Undertaker boots.
What I think, for people who are concerned about their children accidentally buying Undertaker boots or, you know, Hulk Hogan scarves or whatever they do, I believe it's completely fair. There's not like pop-ups that come up and then fool you into clicking them to buy stuff.
Right.
That doesn't happen. There's a very separately, it's a separately marked section that says store and there's a dollar sign there. It's pretty obvious that you're going to be spending real money. There's no trickery.
The Ultimate Warrior's head comes up and he's like, hey, you lost this match. Maybe you need some ninja gloves. Click here. None of that. No. Good.
I'd like to see the Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah.
I think he'd translate really well into this game.
Well, yeah, he's the Ultimate Warrior, though. So maybe he's like the most expensive character, you know, obviously. Yeah. I don't have to explain that one.
Actually, the most expensive character, I think, is Triple H's King of Kings persona. Right. And that he's the boss, so, I mean, that makes sense.
Stone Cold Steve Austin in it?
No.
But he could be two things. He could be stone and cold powers.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. NetherRealm, if you're listening, that one's not for free.
That's
you have to send
good.
Me a check.
Yeah, I'd pay for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, we've been talking about WWE Immortals, which you can get for iOS and Android. And next up, we're going to be hearing from Jody talking about Fairy Solitaire. But let's hear a track before that. This one's from the Dragon Age Inquisition soundtrack, Jody.
Yeah, that's right. It's one of the tavern songs you'll hear when you go into the game's inns.
Now, Jody, you've been playing Fairy Solitaire.
Yeah, it's a bit of an older game that I've finally dug out of my backlog. It's from 2009. It's by an indie company named Subsoap, who basically stole the PopCap formula that they applied to cute games like Bejeweled and Peggle and Bookworm Adventures and Plants vs. Zombies and applied that to Solitaire, which is still, I think, the most played game on PC. It's still up there for the most hours any game on any PC has been played, which makes Counter-Strike look rubbish because even Minesweeper beats it. So what they did was they took Solitaire, which is fun to play on your computer. Everybody likes clicking on cards, and put this veneer over the top of it of story and cute little animations and special effects, like the way Bejeweled. I mean, Bejeweled is, at its core, so simple it's basically ignorant. You're just lining up three different colored things to get three that are the same color.
How dare you, sir?
But then what they put on top of that is what makes it great and Moorish and keeps you coming back to it, because every time you do that, cool things happen and awesome noises play, and when you finish a level in Peggle, it plays Ode to Joy and you feel like your life is justified and all things are beautiful.
Right.
So they did that with Solitaire. They did that. They took a game that already exists and added things like magic spells to it. So that some of the decks of cards that you're working with will be inaccessible at the start of a hand of solitaire because they might be frozen in a block of ice, but there's a fireball hidden away underneath like two kings and a queen in one of the other decks. And so you have to work your way. You have to, when you're choosing like which of these queens am I going to choose next, you go for the one that's near that fireball so that you can explode and ice shatters everywhere. And it's very satisfying because solitaire is a game you don't need a computer to be playing. I have a deck of cards. I could just shuffle them myself. But this video gamifies solitaire in a much more interesting way than just the Microsoft Windows way. Like, there's like decks that are stuck inside thorns, and then there's like roses underneath others, and you have to get those, and then like the roses ungrow, and then you have access to those cards. All these little things that just make it more video gamey and satisfying.
When I saw you on Steam the other day and you were playing Fairy Solitaire, and I asked you about it, your response was, and it requires a language warning, it was the most excited I have ever heard you about anything. Your response was, fucking A. And then you told me that this game also involves the rescuing of fairies from magical cages.
That's right.
Tell me about this. I am enthralled.
Each level has like some special thing, like there'll be 10 hands in a level, and there's some special objective that you need to complete, like get a run of 10 cards before you have to flip over another card from the deck. And if you achieve that, then you get some more points and a bar gets closer to filling up. And if you fill that bar, then at the end of that level, a tiny little glowing winged fairy buzzing around inside a glass cage gets freed.
What happens if you don't fill up that bar? Does it get hit with a rock?
I don't know, because I'm not a monster and I free the goddamn fairies.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. All right.
How dare you even question me.
Solitaire genius.
It's not that hard, to be honest. Like, okay. There are no difficulty levels or anything, and it's set at a pretty low level, as you might expect from a game featuring the word fairy in its title. It's kind of kid-friendly.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and it also has pets, so that's important to know. Sometimes, hidden underneath one of the cards, you'll flip over, there'll be an egg, just a weird coloured egg.
Yeah.
And then you can take it away and hatch it, and you get a pet. You wind up with a bunch of them, and then you select one that's your current pet. Mm. And whichever one you selected, like, it earns experience points as you play, and then levels up and grows.
Brilliant.
From, like, a tiny little tadpole thing to a huge swamp frog, or there are lizards. And some of them are, like, robots. They're just weird, cute, random animals and companions that exist for no reason except to make you keep playing, because like another pet has to hatch and then level up before I can level up my squirrel.
You are so excited. So which is your favorite pet?
I don't have a favorite pet. They're like all my children. Why would I choose between them?
Okay.
Again, I'm not a monster.
No, but they're not here right now. You've got to have one that you like more than the others, surely. Really?
No.
Or every single one of them. They're all your children.
Exactly.
They're all special in their own way.
I hatched them all from eggs myself.
Well, tell us about some of them, Jody. We need content.
I did. I have a lizard. I have this little flying robot. There's like another lizard who's a fire lizard. And there's, I don't know, a froggy kind of dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do they have names?
I don't know.
You could name... So these are your nameless children that
exactly.
You all love equally.
Yes.
You've not named any of them.
No, I haven't.
I think someone maybe is a little bit of a monster.
Fine.
Yeah. You better have names for next week. Come in. So you would give this game, if we were writing for like PC Gamer magazine in like circa 1992, like 10 out of 10, right?
Not entirely.
Okay.
Because it also has, there's a story mode with it, and the story is naff. It's really quite boring and sort of generic fantasy mash with really bad voice acting. It's not like the tidbits of story that you get in Plants vs. Zombies, which are really hilarious, and Plants vs. Zombies is not a game that needs memorable characters, but it has Crazy Dave, who everyone loves.
Mm-hmm.
There's no memorable characters in this, and no one would love them. They're all just like generic old wizard, and then some fairies, and then a dude who does stuff with things. So I don't even know.
6 out of 10 for story.
Yeah.
Cool. So Fairy Solitaire sounds really cool. Available on Steam?
Yes, it is available on Steam.
Awesome. Thanks, Jody, very much. Well, that's going to bring us to the end of this episode of Zed Games. Thanks very much for listening. It's been very fun to do the show. Hope it was fun to listen to. We'll be back next week at the same time. See you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.